Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Chris Leampour from Talk Sports Philly with another edition of Talk Sports Philly Radio. And today we have with us on the table Ken Dunick of Jersey Man Magazine and Philly Man Magazine. And he has a great history here in Philadelphia, so we have him on the show, and we will be talking to him for about a half an hour about all the different happenings here in Philadelphia and what he's involved in. How you doing today, Ken?
Hey, Chris, how are you? Nice to be with you today.
Well, thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate it. Let's get a little bit of history with you here in Philadelphia and how you relate to Philadelphia sports. You have a pretty long history dating back way back into the 1980s, maybe even before with Philadelphia, and you played on the Philadelphia Eagles team when they went to the Super Bowl with Ron Jaworski and played against the Raiders and Jim Plunkett. Can you tell us a little bit about your background here in Philadelphia?
Well, you're right. I was very fortunate to have made that 1980 Eagles roster. You know, Chris, I was a basketball player in college at Memphis State University, which is now the University of Memphis. And I had switched to football my senior year because it became obvious I wasn't going to play in the NBA, and they thought I had potential as a tight end. So I played actually two seasons of football at Memphis State, and then offers coming out of college to join the NFL. The three were the Eagles, the Saints, and the Rams. And this is the honest to God truth. I chose the Eagles because I thought it would look better to be cut from the best team. My strategy was if the Eagles let me go, maybe the Saints and the Rams might take a shot at me, because the Eagles were a better team. If the Saints let me go, I didn't think some of the better teams would even take a look. So I went to that camp knowing that they were only going to keep two tight ends. The existing players at that time were Keith Krefli and John Spagnola. And I get to camp, and things are going relatively well. We go up to the first preseason game up in Buffalo, and John Spagnola did not make the trip because of an intestinal virus, and Keith Krefli separated his shoulder on the first series of downs in the game. So I'm a relative novice, and I walk into the huddle with, you know, on a team that's destined to go to the Super Bowl, and I'm standing with Ron Jaworski, Harold Carmichael, and you know, Wilbur Montgomery, all the greats on that team, and I guess I must have looked a little scared because Vermeil called a timeout and brought me over to the sideline, and he said, listen, he goes, I know you're intimidated. Anybody would be in your position. He said, if you do me a favor, would you just come off the ball and hit the guys with everything you have on every play, and I'll never say a word to you about making a mistake. And the two linebackers for Buffalo back then were Phil Villapiano and Isaiah Robertson, two former All-Pros that I've been watching play since I was, you know, before I was in high school, actually. And I took Vermeil's advice. I just came off the ball. I hit him with everything I had, and I drove him off the ball almost every play. And I knew I made an impression because the offensive line coach, Jerry Wamfler, came up to me and told me that he would probably have to learn my name after that performance. And they had a press conference for me the next day at training camp. So I was able to make an impression early on. I started the next week against the Jets and caught a few passes and showed them enough where they kept me on the team. And, of course, history records that, that team went on to the Super Bowl. And I probably wear the NFC Championship ring today because of my ability to stick in there and take Dick Vermeil's advice.
Wow. That's incredible. And it's sometimes, you know, in life that you get an opportunity and you're not expecting it, and you were able to take full advantage of it and get on the team. How was it playing with the Eagles during that year? You know, did it go beyond everything that you had expected?
Oh, it was literally a dream come true. You know, I was such a novice when it came to football that, and I almost felt guilty for a while because, you know, here these guys the core of the team, guys like Frank LeMaster and Jaworski and Wilbert and Harold Carmel, all these guys had slogged through all those years of losing, and they finally make it to the Super Bowl. And here I'm a rookie free agent. I walk in the locker room, and we go the very first year. So I was very fortunate. I actually would pinch myself every day when I woke up and headed to the locker room, and, you know, just was able to meet so many interesting and great people through that experience. And, of course, getting a chance to be a part of the Super Bowl experience was beyond a dream come true. So I'll be the first to admit I was very, very fortunate with my career.
Yeah, and I remember watching that Super Bowl when I was a kid, and I was just a kid at the time, and it was just so exciting to see. And the Eagles were favored in that, and I just really didn't see them losing that game, but it was a heartbreaker, when they lost, and it almost seemed like the Raiders were destined, you know, watching that game to win it, versus because the Eagles really, you know, look like they were going to win the game. What is some of the experience that you have, you know, of that game? What are some of the great memories of playing that?
Well, now, they put me on injury reserve before the season ended because of an ankle injury, so I did not actually suit up for the game, but I was in New Orleans and on the sideline. But I spent the entire week, you know, in preparation with the team. I ran a scout team offense for the defense. And, you know, I can remember so many experiences. I remember Woody Hayes gave us a pep talk, you know, the night before the game. I can remember having breakfast in the team hotel. And I had flown my father down for the game. And on the left of us was Ed McMahon. And on the right of us was Magic Johnson. And I thought that was pretty cool to be able to share that experience with my dad. And, of course, you know, all the celebrities came down. We were a better team that year. I mean, we had beaten the Raiders a few weeks before. We really had nothing left in the tank at that point. However, Dick Vermeil's training camp is legendary. And we had just run out of gas. And, unfortunately, we picked the biggest stage to with our worst performance of the season. So it's disappointing for Philadelphia and Philadelphia fans, certainly for Dick Vermeil. But getting there is quite an accomplishment. And again, the NFC championship ring that we all wear is a testimony of, you know, how proud we are of what we're able to achieve that season.
Well, yes, and congratulations with that, and I'm sure it's something that you can carry with you and that you will carry with you for the rest of your life. Now, after you left the Eagles, and you were, I think, on there for 1 year, were you with the Eagles?
Yeah, I was released. I was released the following training camp. They had signed a kid by the name of Greg LaFleur in the third round the following year. And even though I felt like I outplayed him in training camp, they had an investment in Greg. So I was released. In 82, I went to training camp with the Baltimore Colts. I actually played in the Hall of Fame game against Minnesota and Bud Grant, and walked out of camp in a dispute with head coach Frank Cush at that time. Was picked up on waivers by the Giants. Did not make the final cut of that team. And I subsequently decided to sign in the fall of 82 with Carl Peterson in the United States Football League. I felt like that might be a better opportunity for me to get some actual playing time. And, of course, history will remember that the Stars went on to become the best franchise in that league. And I was very fortunate to win two more championship rings and play in three championship games with the Philadelphia Baltimore Stars.
Yeah, I remember the USFL, and you know, it was really a good league, considering, you know, they've tried, you know, many other startup or competitive leagues with the NFL. And the USFL, I think, has done the best, or did the best, you know, in that role. And I remember watching as a kid, I was kind of torn between, since I'm from Jersey, you know, being with the Philadelphia Stars and then the New Jersey Generals. Both were good and popular popular teams. Now, the coach for the Stars was Jim Mora. Am I correct in that?
That is correct, although the first coach of the franchise was George Perlis, who resigned about 3 weeks before the training camp was supposed to start when he decided to take the head coaching job at Michigan State. So Carl Peterson, who was the player personnel director for the Eagles back then and took the president's job with the Stars, had had a relationship with Jim Mora. They had both been on Dick Vermeil's staff at UCLA and convinced Jim to take the head coaching job with the Stars. And, of course, Jim did a terrific job. A lot of people don't remember that the Stars have the best three-year record in the history of professional football, 48-13-1, and we played an 18-game season, and we actually won 19 games in 1984 when we won the championship, defeating George Allen and the Arizona Wranglers. So it was quite a team. The team was peppered with all NFL-caliber players, all pros. Of course, people remember John Bunning from the Eagles that was on that team, and Scott Fitzky, my Eagles teammate in 1980, was wide receiver, Penn State All-American quarterback Chuck Fucina, running back Kelvin Bryant, Sam Mills, the linebacker, Sean Landetta, the punter, Bart Oates, the center. I mean, we really had a terrific roster of talented players, and that was just a whole lot of fun to be a part of that team for three seasons.
Wow. So you really had a storybook career with football, going in with the Eagles to the Super Bowl and then going over into the USFL with the Stars and winning several championships there.
I was very lucky. I may be the only player in pro football history to play four full seasons and make it to the championship game all 4 years. So it was certainly a case of being at the right place in the right time. But I have fond memories of my four full seasons of pro football.
That's phenomenal. All right, let's get up to speed a little bit on what's going on today in the present here in Philadelphia with you. I know that you are the publisher and run Jersey Man magazine and the new Philly Man magazine that I believe came out this year, in the last year that you've spread out into the Philly Man magazine area. Give us a little background on the magazines and what made you start it and the concept behind and mission behind the magazines.
Well, I had been a journalism major in college, and when I retired from pro football, I had four daughters, so I really didn't have time to develop a journalistic career. I had to make as much money as I could, so I decided to take a sales job, and always, dabbled with media. I had done some Temple football television with Harry Donahue, and done some writing and some other projects. But fast forward 30 years, we saw an opportunity on the landscape for a men's magazine. I was in the wholesale paper business. My partner and friend Joe LaGrosa owned a printing company. So we created an LLC called New Opportunity Publishing and launched Jersey Man magazine in the fall of 2010. Merrill Reese, the Eagles announcer, was our first cover, and we just felt like it was a difficult environment to launch a print publication with the economy and everything going against us, but we just felt like it was a good idea. And we just worked, we brought it to potential advertisers, we showed it to writers, and immediately we got writers like George Anastasia of the Philadelphia Inquirer, Stan Hockman of the Daily News, Bill Lyon, so many big names decided to join us. And then from an advertising standpoint, TD Bank, Subaru of America, Cooper Hospital, a lot of the big ones saw the potential with the uniqueness of what we were offering in the marketplace, and they decided to join us as well. So, we got it off the ground. We were losing money initially, as most businesses do, but we kept at it, and to the point where when it became time to expand later in the fall of last year, 2014, we launched Philly Man magazine, and that has been accepted. We have high expectations for that sister magazine as well. So, you know, we're off and running with this publication. We also have some other ideas regarding this media brand that we call it, including some radio and TV content as well. So we're very enthusiastic about the future with what we're offering here.
Well, and we get the magazine, at my family's house, and my father reads it often, and it's really well put together and has great articles in it, and it's, you know, high quality magazine. Now, what made you decide, you know, with the world being so electronic now and print publications, you know, they're saying is going out of style? What made you decide to take that route and go with a print magazine versus just going on the electronic frontier?
Well, I'm not going to lie to you. That was a concern. But when we did our research, what we found was that newspapers are struggling because of the immediacy of our society. You know, if a major story breaks, I get it on my phone. I don't have to read about it the next day, which is the way it used to be. So newspapers are challenged in that regard. But when we did our research, we also found that feature magazines like ours are on the rise and actually becoming more profitable. And you can see here locally, we have several local successful publications that include Philly Style Magazine, Philadelphia Magazine, SJ, and South Jersey Magazines are all doing well. So we decided, because of my paper background, my partner's printing background, that we should give this thing a try. And it's been challenging, there's no doubt, but we now feel like we have established ourselves in the marketplace, and our growth has been pretty exciting here, especially the last couple of years. So we're going to continue to move forward and continue to have the brand exposed to more advertisers, more readers, and hopefully this product will continue to grow.
Now, you were speaking of some challenges that you've had. Can you elaborate a little bit on some of the challenges you've had to overcome to get the magazine accepted in the market and, you know, into a profitable state?
Well, I just think that, number one, the economy crashing was difficult to overcome, because when we tried to launch this thing, people were pulling back on advertising because the economy was so bad. So, you know, we had to convince people that to put their hard-earned dollars on the line with us, and that was probably our biggest obstacle. The other thing that we've run into is that if ad agencies and other advertisers take a peripheral look at the magazine, they just dismiss it as something for men. And we're really, we don't exclude women with the magazine. We have women writers. We do features on women. There's no profanity in the magazine. There's no ads for gentlemen's clubs. We really try to run a quality operation here. And when you think about it, there's no reason why women wouldn't like the magazine. I mean, women are Eagles fans. Women like fine wine. They like to go out to eat. They're business people. They're politicians. There's no reason for a woman not to like the magazine. We just felt like there was an opportunity in the marketplace to create a brand specifically for men, and we've done that. Mm-hmm. So, if you know, I would say those have been the two biggest challenges facing us so far. But then again, you know, we fight that perception that print is dying. But, you know, as I've explained to you, it relates more to newspapers than magazines, and you know, it's just a way for people to keep it at arm's length. But normally when people see the entire scope of what we're offering, more often than not, they decide to get involved with us in some form or fashion.
Okay. Sounds great. Now, you've also expanded the brand by creating a legacy group. And this is a networking group where business professionals can get together and exchange businesses. Give us a little background on the legacy group.
Well, it's funny, you know, to overcome some of the challenges we just talked about, we try to put as much into the package for print advertising as we could. One of them was to host events for our advertisers as a way, again, to make them more acceptable of budgeting some money towards us. And we would invite guests to the events in order to try to convince them to take print ads. Many people would show up and say, listen, I love the events. I'm doing business with the relationships I'm making here, but my company just won't print advertise. They don't believe in it. There's no budget for it. I can't do it myself. Is there any way I can continue to come to the events? So the events are private, and we didn't want to charge at the door. So what we did was we created a legacy club, which is a club where people could pay an annual fee and attend the events, and they get some other perks, including a name badge, a permanent name badge, a dining out card. They get their name and their company name in the magazine. And that was launched a little over a year ago, and we currently have 186 members in the Legacy Club that encompasses events in both Philadelphia and South Jersey. And I know you were just at our event at Parks Casino last week, and you know, you can tell your listeners how well attended the events are, and you know how dynamic the business network is that we've created.
Yeah, it was a really good event. I didn't know what to expect. I had, you know, seen through social media and stuff that you guys were doing events, and I had went to one of your tailgates, you know, over the last Eagle season, and really had a good time at that. And I inquired with your daughter Ashley about, you know, coming in and attending an event and checking it out, and really had a good time at the Parks Casino. It was held at their 360 room there, and it was, you know, packed. Pretty much a packed house, and you had good food, and it was just overall, I really had a good time meeting the professionals there, and it's a very quality run event. And of course, it's the only one I've been to. I know you're having an event coming up at the Field House in mid-March. Is your next networking event. So these are definitely great events, and for anybody listening out there who are, you know, is looking to expand their business or make new business contacts, that this would be you know, a great option for you for going to events throughout the Philly area and Jersey area to, you know, promote your business. So what do you have in the future with the Legacy Group? Do you have any, you know, plans on expanding it or where you're going with it?
Well, I mean, we just continue to try to increase the number of people that attend the events. I'm sure, you know, Chris, you can attest to the fact that we've got some interesting people that show up. I know at the last event, former Flyers great Brian Propp was there, and New Jersey Boxing Commissioner and former referee Larry Hazard, and Jesse Rendell, the son of Governor Ed Rendell, was there, and Jervis Peterson of Survivor, who writes an advice column for us, and we always have some very interesting people that show up and kind of add a little bit of spice to the evening. And if anybody is interested in getting more information, they can send me an email at ken@jerseymanmagazine.com. I'd be certainly entertained having them as my guest to take a free look at the event and see if they had an interest in joining the network.
Great. Now, let's just talk a little bit about, you know, the current Eagles. And they just made a big trade, LeSean McCoy, and picking up Kiko Alonso, from a linebacker from the Bills. It seems, you know, to me, it seems, you know, a little controversial. I certainly wasn't expecting it. Do you have any viewpoints on, you know, what the Eagles are doing and what you think where they're headed for the next year's season with this?
surprised by the move, Chris. And I think what you're seeing here is a real, for lack of a better term, power play by Chip Kelly, who is going to put his stamp on this team. And win or lose, he's going to do it his way. Now, were there salary cap issues with this deal? Probably. The way the NFL works these days, and you just saw it with Trent Cole, who they decided to release, is when players get to the back end of these deals and they start to make the big money, the team has a tendency to go to them and try to renegotiate the deal or release them. And I think my problem with the Eagles has been that they'll do this, but then they won't spend the money. You know, they were about $15 million under the cap last year. They could have gone out and got a Darrelle Revis as a corner for a year and maybe made a push to the Super Bowl. So I have no problem with them managing the cap number as long as they spend the money to bring us some quality players, because this franchise deserves to bring a championship to these fans. And I'm a believer in Chip Kelly. I think he's a smart guy. I think he's a sincere guy. I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. But I want to see these moves work, because I think I speak for all Eagles fans and alumni that we're getting a bit tired of waiting. We don't want to go through another rebuilding process. We want a Super Bowl paraded down Broad Street, the Lombardi Trophy paraded down Broad Street. And I just think it's time for that to happen.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I think, really, the Eagles fans are not going to accept anything less than the Super Bowl anymore. We're just not going to be happy unless we get that Super Bowl. Not saying that, obviously, if we do good in the playoffs, that we're not going to be happy fans, but the ultimate goal here is to get that monkey off our back and win a Super Bowl here in Philadelphia. I know we have three championships from pre-Super Bowl era, but you know, just being such a major team and franchise and not have that monkey off our back is something that really, you know, doesn't sit well with the fan base here in Philadelphia. Now, what do you think about them going out and the quarterback situation here in Philly? And are you a supporter of Nick Foles? Do you think they should stay with him, or do you think they should go out and get Mariota? You know, how do you feel about that?
Well, I think Nick Foles has shown me enough to give him the benefit of the doubt. I would not mortgage the future for Marcus Mariota. And I think if you need any example of why you don't do that, look at the Washington situation with RG3. That has set that franchise back years because of the first round choices they gave up. You've now got an injured quarterback in RG3 that is not as effective as they thought he was going to be. And, you know, as you know, injuries, everybody's always one step away from a major injury. So I would not mortgage the future of the franchise for Marcus Mariota. I'd love to have him if there's any way we could do it affordably and economically. I'm all for it. But I think that going forward, let's build this defense. Let's go with Nick Foles. Let's get another running back in here now, maybe a speed wide receiver. There's a lot of holes to fill here. But I think Nick Foles has a chance to get this team where it needs to go. And I think he deserves that chance. So I'm willing to give that an opportunity to make that work.
All right. Well, that definitely sounds that's along the lines where I'm at. I think they should stay with Foles and, once again, not mortgage the future going with a player that they're not really sure how he's going to perform. And definitely the defense is an area where they definitely need to key on this year to hopefully, you know, progress into the team that we want to see them to see here in Philadelphia. Now, before we end up going, we're getting near the end of the show. I just want to give a shout out to the Philly Sports Cave. You can go to them for all your sports memorabilia needs. I want to give a shout out to Sin City Signs for they do business signs here in the local area, and also give a shout out to MJR Sports Integrity, who have a local store here in the Philadelphia area, as well as do autograph signings around the Philadelphia area. I also want to thank you, Ken, for taking time out with us and spending a half hour here talking with us here at Talk Sports Philly about your magazines and about your history here in Philadelphia. And just want to give you any last comments that you have for our fans here at Talk Sports Philly.
Well, listen, it's been great to be with you. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to tell my story and the story of the magazine. And again, if anybody would like to see the magazine or would like to attend a legacy event, I can be reached via email at ken@jerseymanmagazine.com.
All right. Well, thank you, Ken, for being with us. And to all the fans out there in the Philly sports world, once again, this is another edition of Talk Sports Philly Radio. And keep an eye out on us for future radio episodes here in Philadelphia. We will also be putting a post up on our website, TalkSportsPhilly.com, for you to read and be able to listen to the show. And once again, Ken, thank you for coming on today with us here, and look forward to seeing you at some future networking events and reading the magazine, and maybe we'll have you come back here on the show again in the future. All right, thank you, and we will speak with you again next week. Bye-bye.